Welcome back. Michael Roy and Thomas here. It's For Love of Food, SaverLife.com. And the Democrat and Chronicle, Tracy Schumacher's been doing a really good job of covering some of the sad news of this pandemic and shutdown, and that is that a number of restaurants have closed in the Rochester area. Her most recent additions to the list include a bunch of chains, and you know, I've never been a fan of chains, but I don't want to see anyone lose their jobs, and whether it's, you know, a chain or a independent restaurant. But there are a number of chains that have closed, as well as some really cool restaurants. A few of them have been around for a while, but some of them are lesser known. A couple of them I've never been to. So that's partly because I've been behind on getting to visit these places. So Romano's Macaroni Grill, that closed on Jefferson Road in Henrietta. And that's, according to Tracy, the only location that they had in New York State. And I believe it's the owner of Romano's Macaroni Grill who has Rosalie's Kachina in Skinny Atlas, which I think may be named after his mother. This is a long time ago I read about this. And I don't know, I assume Rosalie's Kachina is still open. That was right next door, just barely up the hill from Mirbeau, kind of on the west side of Skinny Atlas. As you go up the hill outside, leaving Skinny Atlas, heading toward Rochester, Mirbeau and Rosalie's Kachina kind of next to each other. So don't know what's happening with that one, but Romano's Macaroni Grill on Jefferson Road has closed. Also, Bonefish Grill at Eastview Mall in Victor. And I have to say, when I was looking at restaurants that had New York State wines, Bonefish was one of the chains that had some featured local wines. I think the first time I went in, they had Dr. Frank and one other winery up on their chalkboard as a couple of their featured, one of their local winery. But the mall's certainly struggling during the shutdown period, being so long that they had to stay in shutdown mode. So also Outback Steakhouse on Jefferson Road, that's closed. So those are, I guess, some of the main chains that were part of her list. Also, Tony's Diner and Vietnamese Cuisine on Culver Road. That was a wonderful spot. Very sorry to see that close. Starry Nights Cafe on University Avenue. Another very cool location. Coffee shop. A place that had a lot of live music, a really neat corner sort of flat iron building there where Atlantic goes off of University. And, you know, hopefully spots like this will be reopened at some point by someone else, maybe, or reopened by the current owner, but it is closed. The Beer Hall Grill and Taps on Empire Boulevard and Penfield is closed, and Starla Bake and Brew, White Spruce Boulevard in Brighton, sort of Brighton slash Henrietta, right across from MCC, that is closed. A place I never got in there. Also, Churi's Coconut Tree Thai Cuisine on East Ridge Road, and Churi's had a Thai restaurant right across from Seabreeze initially, but also sold clothing there. It was kind of an odd combination place, and ice cream, I think. It was really kind of cool clothing, fabulous Thai food, and some really good ice cream right across from Seabreeze, and then was there for quite a few years and then moved to this location on East Ridge Road. So sorry to see them close. Really, really wonderful Thai food. Also, Tom's Restaurant, East Ridge Road, Narondequoit. one of the other chains, Dunkin' Donuts on Monroe Avenue in Brighton closed, and Jimmy G's Night Owl Grill on Main Street in East Rochester is closed. Also, Bay Vista Taqueria, one of my favorite places. They've closed their restaurant. They're going to continue with their food truck and catering from a gravel road location in Webster. They may do some pop-up events there, according to Tracy. And also, I talked to Dave Jackson, the owner, a couple of weeks ago, alerted me that he's going to be closing. Dave really committed to really fresh, great Mexican burritos and quesadillas and tacos. And I originally met him before he got into the restaurant business. I worked for the city of Rochester, and one of the things, actually, that wasn't when I was working for the city of Rochester. I think maybe I was just helping out because we were setting up chef's demonstrations, and I was doing my food show from the Rochester Public Market, and they had a grill set up. And it was actually the idea of one of the security guards at the Rochester Public Market that we should have chefs come and do demonstrations at the market. Because chefs were often shopping at the public market, but people didn't know who they were, didn't realize that. And you got a lot of people around the market. So they set up a grill outside the public market office. And I think there's, or at least up until the coronavirus, they've been doing this for probably 12 or 15 years. But one year there was an event at the, is now New York Kitchen, the New York Wine and Culinary Center, and it was Slice, Dice, and Spice, I think was the event. And it was a cooking competition with different teams, and they offered to let us kind of have a pre-contest, and the winner of that would participate on one of the teams in Slice, Dice, and Spice. It was a way for them to get the word out about the event and, again, provide us with a slot for a candidate. So we did a cooking competition, took essentially random people. The first, I don't remember how many people took part in this. I got to go back and find my records. Quite a few years ago. And Dave Jackson, who now owns Bay Vista Taqueria food truck, won that competition. It was a market basket competition, so each participant got the same ingredients, and then had, like 2 hours maybe to put it together and cook it. And I don't recall whether we did it over one or two Saturdays, but it was a lot of cooking. I had to clean up and get the next chef ready, and so Dave won that competition. And so he went on to participate in the team in Slice, Dice, and Spice. I think his team won that year. It was a competition that was held over several different years. But he'd already had the cooking bug. And then, a few years after that, he called me and said, "Hey, I don't know if you remember me from the cooking contest, but I've opened Bay Vista Taqueria in Webster on Bay Road. And loved going up there to have it." I've said before, his burritos have convinced me that I shouldn't ignore burritos totally. Because most of the burritos I had up until his have been too heavy, they wrap too thick, too much beans and rice, just too big. A lot of places that do burritos just do. You pick them up and they weigh too much. You just, at least for me, that does not make me hungry to have a burrito that is like lifting a weight. And he looked around a long time to find the right wraps for his burritos that are, they're delicious. They're light enough, but they're tough enough to hold. It's tricky. And what he puts in them is far more interesting. And they're not huge, so you'll find his food truck around. You should look for it, and It's a Bay Vista Taqueria, but the restaurant on Bay Road is closed. But he is going to be doing catering and things too. And one other note, she had Tracy Schumacher in the Democrat and Chronicle. You should look up the article. You should consider subscribing if you haven't to the Democrat and Chronicle. You know, they it's owned by Gannett, but they have a fair number of local reporters still working hard, doing some really excellent stories, photographers and writers. And so, you know, it's supporting local journalism. I think it's $10 a month that I pay for my digital subscription, which I have had for quite a while. And, you know, and these days they're doing it. So some of their content, a fair amount of their content is subscriber only. A lot of the restaurant food things are, like, partly because that drives subscriptions. People want to read about this. And Tracy does a really good job of covering the food scene in a variety of ways in Rochester. So, again, get a subscription so you can easily find these articles at the Democrat and Chronicle. And there probably will be more closings coming up, and there most certainly will be a lot more closings if we move backwards. As I said in the last hour in the gardening show, stores are open, but there are a lot of store owners that are being pretty strict about you got to have a mask on. And you can't imagine how annoying it is to own a store to make that very simple request, wear a mask if you want to come in, so it protects my customers, protects me. Show us respect by wearing a mask, and people come in with an attitude like, you know, the president doesn't wear one, so I don't have to wear one. And in these states, you know, in the South, the Southwest, much of the country other than the Northeast, which has already gone through a bad period, horrible period of coronavirus, we don't want to go back to that and be where these other states are right now. And so you got to wear a mask. You got to wear masks in restaurants, except when you're seated. And, you know, be nice about it. Be, you know, if you see someone without a mask, it doesn't mean you have to convince them to wear one, but the more people that are wearing masks, the more peer pressure there is for those people who don't want to actually wear one. And these other states like Texas now are finally starting to mandate wearing a mask, which they should have done a long time ago. They should have driven their infection rates low enough they could do contact tracing. A lot of should-haves, and you'd think we were back in February and didn't know what was happening. There's really no excuse at this point for except that I think a lot of these states and other and people were hoping that this coronavirus would go away in the summer the way the flu does, largely, and it hasn't. So those that gambled that it would go away in the summer have pretty much officially lost that bet, and it's the people who are going to lose their lives and be really sick that is just is devastating to contemplate. So New York State has done well. Other states around us have done quite well at getting the infection rate low enough that we can control it, and we control it by wearing a mask when you're in public and when you're near people, and practice the social distancing. It's going to be the way of life until the vaccine comes about. That's just the way it is. You might as well find a mask that you like, fabric that you like, make your own or buy one. But this wearing a mask is a way of life until we get the vaccine, which might be a few months, more likely longer than that. But if we can keep this down, businesses can stay open, restaurants can finally allow in more customers at some point soon. They got to get above 50% capacity, which is the limit right now. And I said this last week, restaurants cannot make money at 50% capacity. So we've got to keep this rate low enough we can continue to reopen. And We don't want to lose these restaurants. We don't want these families to lose their businesses, the employees lose their jobs. And, you know, we want the economy to reopen. We've got to keep the infection rate low. You can't have it both ways. You can't say, you know, reopen faster and I don't care if I wear a mask, because that's a recipe for exactly what's happening in other states. And you can go to the Johns Hopkins website and see the daily, they post them every day, the rate of infection in each of the 50 states, and see how New York State's doing compared to these other states. It may affect where you decide to go this summer, especially the fact that New York State has a 2-week quarantine on people who come back into the state from a bunch of these states with big issues. So, you know, if you want businesses to survive, if you want restaurants to survive, and bars and, you know, bakeries and so all these businesses, many of them are small, and they're the things that make our area unique, are having these small businesses rather than just big chains. We've got to keep this infection rate low. If you have comments, questions, you can email me anytime, michael@saverlife.com. If you've had some really fantastic food somewhere, let me know. I was talking to someone just yesterday who was asking me about the wineries, you know, wondering if they're open, are their tasting rooms open? And they are. I'd say in general, wineries in the Finger Lakes and Western New York are now open. But many of them, it's by appointment only, so they can limit the numbers. And if you have a few favorite ones, I would go online and check with them and make an appointment if you can, just to be sure. But most of them have reopened, some with more limited hours, obviously more limited visitors. Many of them are doing flights, kind of pre-designed flights in some really cool different containers. I think it was Three Brothers Winery that's using little tubes that you pour the wine out of into your glass so you can try each. It allows them to have, I don't know, maybe they had 6 or 8 little of these little tubes like you'd find in chemistry class that are all in this little holder. And so you can try a bunch of different wines on your own rather than standing at a tasting bar with people next to you. And that's going to be more difficult with social distancing. So the wineries are doing some very creative things in terms of tasting. And again, different versions of flights so they can prepare them for you, and setting up more outdoor spaces. Boundary Breaks has some beautiful outdoor spaces. I mean, a lot of the wineries already had these spaces, but really weren't maximizing the use of them. And now they've put a lot of investment into creating outdoor spaces for tasting and people to enjoy the view and spend time at the winery and hopefully buy some wine. It's been a challenging winter and spring for the wineries. This was way back in March, maybe, or first week of April, perhaps, when Glenora Wine Cellars posted that they normally had about, I think it was 1,700 visitors that week of, it was the first week of April, and they'd had 27 instead of 1,700. So, and those numbers just go up as you get, you know, to this time of the year, far more tourism normally at the wineries right now. So they are bringing in more people, but with the appointments, social distancing, it is somewhat limited. So you can't assume that you can just go anywhere, the wineries, and pull in and taste whatever you want. That's probably not going to happen this year at very many places. I would make an appointment. I would ideally go during the week when there are fewer tourists, and treat it as a kind of a little bit of a challenge. You know, where do you want to go? Which wineries you've heard about? which ones have friends told you about, and, you know, put together a little itinerary. Check in with those wineries, see if you can make an appointment. Don't make very many appointments. It's always been a problem when there, especially with tour groups, people, they would make appointments and then they would get behind on their schedule and they'd be an hour late or 2 hours late or just would never get there. And so, you know, I wouldn't make more than three or four appointments in a day. You know, maybe two before lunch, maybe two after lunch. Maybe one of those is actually at a winery that has a restaurant, like Verasian's restaurant at Glenora, where you can do some tasting as part of your lunch. Do one winery before that, maybe two wineries in the afternoon, and not, you know, maybe if there's still time and you still want to taste some wine, maybe you can find a winery that doesn't take appointments where you can just stop in, but don't try to do too many appointments. It really takes the fun out of it to try to hurry through and then get on to the next winery. Get to know the place you're at and enjoy the wines, enjoy the view, and you know, things are going to go more slowly probably because of the cleaning, disinfecting, the social distancing, the putting together the flights. You know, this all can take more time. And so to try to have some empathy for the employees, for other customers, et cetera. And, you know, I saw, this was an article in the New York Times opinion article, and it was Frank Bruni or Thomas Friedman, but it was a basically a bumper sticker messaging that they were suggesting for Biden for 2020, which was respect science, respect nature, respect each other. And that's something that we would all do well to remember that, and especially, you know, when it's a restaurant or a winery or other business, when there are stressful things happening, whether you're worried about getting sick or someone, you know, else is, again, respect others. That is key. And respecting science means you wear a mask. That is, the science has been very, very clear on this, both research on and exactly how this, the droplets of when you speak or sing or whatever, where they go, as well as the science of how many people get infected and how many will perhaps die because of that. So again, respect science, respect nature, which has a lot to do with the environment, and respect each other. So a great slogan for any politician, really. So they were just suggesting that, hoping perhaps that Biden would adopt it. And if not, we can still adopt it. It doesn't have to be a political statement. It can just be a human statement, really. Again, it's really very, very simple. Respecting science, it kind of starts with that. Also, saw a note this week, a lot of the businesses on Railroad Street are excited about this. The city of Rochester has turned part of Railroad Street near the public market into a one-way street. So a one-way street going toward the market. Again, just part of the street, the part that's right in front of Roarbox and Black Button and Boxcar Donuts and Bitter Honey and Katbucha, all of them in that section of Railroad Street, so they can have more outdoor seating. And this just started a few days ago, and they put up concrete barriers, so you're very safe to sit and eat there. It's well set up, and the it's really a cool way to encourage more outdoor dining and tasting and things. It's I love the setup. The way they've done it looks beautiful. I posted it for Instagram, Rochester Food Net. You should follow Rochester Food Net on Instagram. And so we've got great photography from Kurt Brownell sometimes. Not so great, but okay photography from me sometimes. And some really good photos from Chris Clemens of Exploring Upstate. All three of us collaborating with Instagram for Rochester Food Net. And so I posted a photo of the setup that is, just as a few days ago, is in place on Railroad Street by the Public Market. And I think we'll see more streets closed like this. I saw someone pointing to, forget the name of the street in Brooklyn, but they were talking about basically a street that was shut down in Brooklyn. It's Arthur Avenue. And they're suggesting that we could do that here in Rochester, maybe Park Avenue, 5 months of the year, a section of it. Maybe not the entire Park Avenue, but this local person was suggesting Vassar through Somerton, shut down for 5 months, kind of spring or late spring, summer, and early fall. More cities are thinking about this. I thought I read, this was a few weeks ago, that New York City was going to potentially shut down 40 miles of streets, often near parks and maybe restaurant districts, to set up more, just in New York City's case, more space to be outdoors where you have such a huge concentration of people. But for Rochester, this could be kind of cool for Park Avenue, and what a change it would be. I mean, they shut it down for the Park Avenue Festival, but then you got vendors that line both sides of Park Avenue. But how cool it would be to have that be shut down. I don't know if they would shut down the cross streets. I mean, who knows how they would do it? But they would probably put up some concrete barriers or something, but they also have to be able to get fire trucks and things through. So that's part of the issue, is just access for fire and safety. But this is one of the first examples in Rochester with Railroad Street being turned into a one-way street. Linden Street in Geneva, talked about that a lot as one of the keys that has really turned Geneva into a culinary destination. Linden Street already was a one-way street, and they close it off on weekends, sometimes weekend evenings. And that started quite a few years ago when they had the Rosé Soirée in June. They got approval to shut the street down for that event and realized, I think, the businesses that live there, as well as the city government, that this was a very cool space. And so now they've been doing that on a fairly regular basis. Again, that was even before the coronavirus and more outdoor seating was suggested. Check out Railroad Street. They're going to be doing some special deals with July 4th weekend, and you can check those out at some of the places like Roarbacks and Black Button. Look them up online and you'll get some of those details. Also, there's this coming week, July 6th through the 12th. This is posted by Sean Dunwoody, a local artist, set up by the Rochester Black Young Professionals, that there will be a Rochester Black Restaurant Week this coming week, July 6th through the 12th. And they've got a bunch of restaurants as part of this. French Quarter Cafe, which is got some wonderful food and one of the few New Orleans cuisine restaurants around. Also, Rock City Ramen, Da Vinci of Greece, Taste of the Bahamas, Caribbean Heritage, Uncle Moe's, And they have these set up each day this coming week. You can go to rocbyp.org, rocbyp.org to get more details on those. And you know, maybe you can't go this week, but try to get to some of these restaurants if you haven't discovered them before. They've got some delicious food, and they may be restaurants that you haven't heard of. The Democrat Chronicles for quite a few months now has been putting a lot more effort into going and tasting and writing about restaurants, not just black-owned ones, but in areas of the city that are not thought of as culinary destinations, but have some really good food and restaurants or takeout or bakeries, etc. And so, yet another reason to get a subscription so you can follow some of their work in covering a broader restaurant scene than been covered in the past. And if you want details on any of the things you hear me mention, you can email me, michael@saverlife.com. Let me know where you go, what you run into. This past week, I was part of a Zoom class through Rochester Brainery with Kat Bucha. She does this several times a year and does a few different classes, but this was making your own kombucha, which I tasted quite a few of hers and others, thought it was kind of a fascinating process. And so we participants picked up a kit from Kat Bucha this past week, and then a few days ago had this Zoom class one evening where she went through, you know, how to make it, why to make it, what happens, all kinds of details about this process of making kombucha. And one of the funny details that she mentioned was that there is a fermentation that takes place, and there is a tiny bit of alcohol that's formed when you make kombucha. It's not enough to, it was like, I think she said like 0.5%, 1% maybe, and a beer is 5-6% or more. So this is a very small amount of alcohol, but some people for health reasons or whatever may want to be careful and not consume any alcohol. But the comparison she made was orange juice, that orange juice is something that does start fermenting a little bit and can have a percent or two of alcohol in it. And no one ever knows that because you can't taste it. It's you consume it before it really ferments much. But and there may be some orange juices that are pasteurized, and you know that doesn't happen at all. She may be talking more about fresh squeezed orange juice that you might buy, and there's no pasteurization. So that was just kind of a funny comparison. So a really a neat Zoom class, again, with Kat Bucha and then through the Rochester Brainery, which has tons of topics. Some revolve around food and gardening, art, a whole wide range of things that you can take at Rochester Brainery. And they're hoping at some point to get back to in-person classes. I'm not sure if they are doing some that way, but this one a few days ago was a Zoom class with, Kat Bucha, Kat Schwartz. So you should try that out. Kombucha is a fascinating thing. It really is, for a whole lot of different reasons. It's the microbes, which are fascinating, the fermentation, it's the flavoring, the flavors that you can infuse in it. Some really, really cool ones. One other thing, there are some restaurants that are opening, this is a hard time for a restaurant to open, but in some cases, leases were signed, everything is, was in the works, and they are were perhaps slowed down from reopening, but are finally doing that. And one of them is the original Steve's Diner. And that, according to the article in the Democrat and Chronicle, is going to open some point later here this month in July. They already have two locations, one Penfield Road and one Whitney Road. This one's going to be on the west side, the Chai Lai Paul Plaza. It was the Acropolis family restaurant originally. That closed back in February. And they are planning to open this Wednesday. This was as of a couple weeks ago, so I'm not certain that that's going to, that timing's going to work. But supposedly this Wednesday, July 8th or soon thereafter, they're going to be open on the west side. And the Acropolis had been there for, I think, 40 years, according to this article. So they've completely redone it. It looks kind of cool. So check that out. Again, opening soon. Steve's original diner. And I haven't been to the other two. I got to go visit one of them at some point here in the near future. If you are reluctant somewhat to go in restaurants these days and still want to be extra careful, almost all of these restaurants are still doing takeout. They're doing it really well. They've been doing it for quite a few weeks now, and they have good systems set up. And it's a great way to support local restaurants, even if you'd rather not be inside dining or outside dining, which again, a lot of the restaurants have expanded that. And it's again a challenging time, to say the least, for businesses in general, but restaurants really, this is I've said this maybe too many times, but restaurants struggle to make money with 100% occupancy, but to have 50% for weeks at a time, that, you know, they want to be open, but so difficult to do that. Also, a note that the Brown Hound downtown at the Memorial Art Gallery will be reopening this Wednesday, July 8th. And they're excited about that. Of course, the museum is open to the public. It's been open for members, I think, but it will be open to the public starting July 8th. And so the Brown Hound downtown, one of my favorite sources of pastries and cookies, and their coffee shop, not to mention lunch and brunch, is reopening July 8th this week, again, at the Memorial Art Gallery. So some things are reopening, and I hope you get a chance to stop in there. Or email me if you hear about some other openings or other things that are happening. Michael@saverlife.com. We'll be back at 11 o'clock with Discover the Finger Lakes, and tomorrow of the Grapevine. It's 9 a.m. here at no longer on WISL 1040. We have switched to an all online broadcast from my website. So it's not live. I taped this, but just really hours before the time. And you can find previous shows here as well, saverlife.com. If you know friends or neighbors, family, whoever, who have been listeners of mine, let them know about the change. I've heard from tons of listeners. It's great to hear from them, and send me a note. Let me know, give me suggestions, etc. Michael@saverlife.com. If you want details about why I left WISL 1040, you can find those on my Facebook page. And if you don't find those happy to send you what I posted to Facebook. And glad to be doing this on my own. I'm especially grateful to Chris Clemens from Exploring Upstate, who designed this new website for me months ago, before I knew this might happen, before inkling that I would be leaving the station. He had offered to set up a new website, which makes it much easier for me to work with, and it works like a modern website, which is crucial. And so you go to exploringupstate.com. Romanos.com. You can find out more about Chris and all the places that he's visited and written about and photographed around New York State, around upstate, and also follow him on Instagram. He's closing in on 10,000 followers on Instagram, which is nothing short of remarkable, and you know, needs a few hundred more. So check him out on Instagram and Exploring Upstate and exploringupstate.com. We'll be back with Discover the Finger Lakes at 11 o'clock here on saverlife.com.